73. Telling which stories? I am worried about the tower's protections failing. If we are not safe from the unmade here, then where? From drawer 311, Garnet.
Stuff it, Beard, Ved said. You did not meet the Blackthorn.
I did, the other soldier said. He complimented me on my uniform and gave me his own knife for valor.
Liar.
Be careful, Beard said. Cal might stab you if you keep interrupting a good story.
Me, Kaladin said, walking with the others of the squad on patrol. Don't bring me into this, Beard.
Look at him, Beard said. He's got hungry eyes, Ved. He wants to hear the end of the story.
Kaladin smiled with the others. He had joined the Wall Guard officially upon Elokar's orders and had promptly been added to Lieutenant Noro's squad. It felt almost cheap to be part of the group so quickly after the effort it had been to forge Bridge 4. Still, Kaladin liked these men and enjoyed their banter as they ran their patrol beat along the inside base of the wall. Six men was a lot for a simple patrol, but Azure wanted them to stay in groups. Along with Beard, Ved, and Noro, the squad included a heavyset man named Alloward and a friendly man named Vasilev, Alethi, but with obvious Thalen heritage. The two kept trying to get Kaladin to play cards with them. It was an uncomfortable reminder of Saw and the Parshmen.
Well, you won't believe what happened next, Beard continued. The Blackthorn told me. Oh, storm it, you're not listening, are you?
Nope, Ved said. Too busy looking at that.
He nodded back at something they'd passed. Beard snickered.
Ha! Will you look at that roosting chicken? Who does he think he's impressing?
Storming waste of skin, Ved agreed.
Cal grinned, glanced over his shoulder, looking for whoever Beard and Ved had spotted. Must be someone silly to provoke such a strong... It was Adolin. The prince lounged on the corner wearing a false face and a yellow suit after the new fashionable style. He was guarded by Drahi, who stood several inches taller, happily munching on some chowder.
Somewhere, Beard said solemnly, a kingdom is without its banners because that fellow bought them all up and made coats out of them.
Where do they think up these things? Vasilev asked. I mean, storms. Do they just say, you know what I need for the apocalypse? You know what would be really handy? A new coat. Extra sequins.
They passed Adolin, who nodded toward Kaladin, then looked away. That meant all was well, and Kaladin could continue with the guards. A shake of the head would have been the sign to extricate himself and return to the tailor's shop. Beard continued to snicker.
When in the service of the merchant lords of Steen, he noted, I once had to swim across an entire vat of dye in order to save the prince's daughter. When I was done, I still wasn't as colorful as that preening Kremling.
Alloward grunted.
Storming highborns. Useless for anything but giving bad orders and eating twice as much food as an honest man.
But,
Kaladin said,
how can you say that? I mean, he's light-eyed. Like us.
He winced. Did that sound fake?
It sure is nice being light-eyed, as I, of course, have light eyes. Like you, my eyes are lighter than the dark eyes of dark eyes.
He had to summon Syl several times a day to keep his eye color from changing.
Like us? Beard said. Cal, what crevasse have you been living in? Are the Middlers actually useful where you come from?
Some, Kaladin said. Beard and Ved, well, the whole squad except Noro, were tenors. Men of the 10th Dawn, lowest ranking in the light-eyed stratification system. Kaladin hadn't ever paid much attention. To him, light-eyes had always just been light-eyes. These men saw the world very differently. Middlers were anyone better than Eighth Dawn, but who weren't quite High Lords. They might as well have been another species for how the squadsmen thought of them, particularly those of the Fifth and Sixth Dawn, who didn't serve in the military. How was it that these men somehow naturally ended up surrounding themselves with others of their own rank? They married tenors, drank with tenors, joked with tenors. They had their own jargon and traditions. There was an entire world represented here that Kaladin had never seen, despite it residing right next door to him. "Some middlers are useful," Kaladin said. "Some of them are good at dueling. Maybe we could go back and recruit that guy. He was wearing a sword." The others looked at him like he was mad.
"Kal Makip," Beard said.
Kip was a slang word that Kaladin hadn't quite figured out yet.
"You're a good fellow. I like how you see the best in folks. You haven't even learned to ignore me yet, which most folks decide to do after our first meal together. But you've got to learn to see the world for how it is. You can't go around trusting middlers, unless they're good officers like the High Marshal. Men like that one back there, they'll strut about telling you everything you should do, but put them on the wall during an attack, and they'll wet themselves yellower than that suit."
"They have parties," Bet agreed. "Best thing for them, really. Keeps them out of our business."
What a strange mix of emotions. On one hand, he wanted to tell them about Amaram and rant about the injustices done, repeatedly, to those he loved. At the same time, they were mocking Adolin Kolin, who had a shot at the title of best swordsman in all of Alethkar. Yes, his suit was a little bright, but if they would merely spend 5 minutes talking to him, they'd see he wasn't so bad. Kaladin trudged along. It felt wrong to be on patrol without a spear, and he instinctively sought out Syl, who rode the winds above. He'd been given a side sword to carry at his right, a truncheon to carry at his left, and a small round shield. The first thing the wall guard had taught him was how to draw the sword by reaching down with his right hand, not lowering his shield, and pulling it free of the sheath. They wouldn't use sword or truncheon when the Voidbringers finally assaulted. There were proper pikes up above for that. Down here was a different matter. The large road, it rounded the city alongside the wall, was clear and clean, maintained by the guard. But most of the streets that branched off it were crowded with people. Nobody but the poorest and most wretched wanted to be this close to the walls.
"How is it," Ved said, "those refugees can't get it through their heads that we're the only thing separating them from the army outside?"
Indeed, many of those they passed on side streets watched the patrol with outright hostility. At least nobody had thrown anything at them today.
"They see that we're fed," Noro replied. "They smell food from our barracks. They're not thinking with their heads, but with their stomachs." "Half of those belong to the cult, anyway," Beard noted. "One of these days I'll have to infiltrate that. Might have to marry their high priestess. But let me tell you, I'm terrible in a harem. Last time, the other men grew jealous of me taking all the priestess's attention."
"She laughed so hard at your offering she got distracted, eh?" Ved asked.
"Actually, there's a story about—"
"Calm it, Beard," the lieutenant said. "Let's get ready for the delivery."
He shifted his shield to his other hand, then took out his truncheon.
"Get intimidating, everybody. Truncheons only."
The group pulled out their wooden cudgels. It felt wrong to have to defend themselves from their own people. Brought back memories of being in Amaram's army bivouacking near towns. Everyone had always talked about the glories of the army and the fight on the Shattered Plains, and yet once towns got done gawking, they transitioned to hostility with remarkable speed. An army was the sort of thing everyone wanted to have, so long as it was off doing important things elsewhere. Noro's squad met up with another from their platoon, with two squads on the wall for duty, two squads off, and two down here patrolling. They were around 40 strong. Together, the 12 men formed up to guard a slow, chull-pulled wagon that left one of their larger barrack warehouses. It carried a mound of closed sacks. Refugees crowded around, and Kaladin brandished his truncheon. He had to use his shield to shove a man who got too close. Fortunately, this caused others to back away instead of rushing the wagon. They rolled inward only one street before stopping at a city square. Syl flitted down and rested on his shoulder.
They look like they hate you.
Not me, Kaladin whispered. The uniform.
What? What will you do if they actually attack?
He didn't know. He hadn't come to this city to fight the populace, but if he refused to defend the squad...
Storming Velalant is late, Ved grumbled. A little more time, Noro said. We'll be fine. The good people know this food goes to them eventually.
Yes, after they wait hours in line at Velalant's distribution stations. Farther into the city, obscured by the gathering crowds, a group of people approached in stark violet with masks obscuring their faces. Kaladin watched uncomfortably as they started whipping their own forearms, drawing pain spren, which climbed from the ground around them, like hands missing the skin. Except these were too large, and the wrong color, and didn't seem human.
I prayed to the spren of the night, and they came to me,
a man at their forefront shouted, raising hands high.
They rid me of my pain.
Oh, no.
Syl whispered.
Embrace them. The spren of changes. The spren of a new storm. A new land. A new people.
Kaladin took Noro by the arm.
Sir, we need to retreat. Get this grain back to the warehouse.
We have orders to...
Noro trailed off as he glanced to the increasingly hostile crowd. Fortunately, a group of some 50 men in blue and red rounded a corner and began shoving aside refugees with rough hands and barked shouts. Noro's sigh was almost comically loud. The angry crowd broke away as Velalant's troops surrounded the grain shipment.
Why do we do this in the daytime? Kaladin asked one of their officers. And why don't you simply come to our warehouse and escort it from there? Why the display?
A soldier moved him, politely but firmly, back from the wagon. The troops surrounded it and marched it away, the crowd flowing after them. When they got back to the wall, Kaladin felt like a man seeing land after swimming all the way to Thalina. He pressed his palm against the stone, feeling its cool, rough grain, drawing a sense of safety from it, much as he would draw out stormlight. It would have been easy to fight that crowd. They were basically unarmed. But while training prepared you for the mechanics of the fight, the emotions were another thing entirely. Syl huddled on his shoulder, staring back along the street.
This is all the Queen's fault, Beard muttered softly. If she hadn't killed that Ardent...
Stop with that, Noro said sharply.
He took a deep breath.
My squad, we're on the wall next. You have half an hour to grab a drink or a nap, then assemble at our station above.
And storms be praised for that, Beard said,
heading straight for the stairwell, obviously planning to get to the station above, then relax.
I'll happily take some time staring down an enemy army, thank you very much.
Kaladin joined Beard in climbing. He still didn't know where the man had gotten his nickname. Noro was the only one in the squad who wore a beard, though his wasn't exactly inspiring. Rock would have laughed it to shame and euthanized it with a razor and some soap.
Why do we pay off the High Lord's beard?
Kaladin asked as they climbed. Velalant and his type are pretty useless from what I've seen.
Yeah, we lost the real High Lords and the riots are to the palace, but the High Marshal knows what to do. I suspect that if we didn't share with people like Velalant, we'd have to fight them off from seizing the grain. At least this way people are eventually getting fed, and we can watch the wall.
They talked like that a lot. Holding the city wall was their job, and if they looked too far afield, tried too hard to police the city or bring down the cult, they'd lose their focus. The city had to stand. Even if it burned inside, it had to stand. To an extent, Kaladin agreed. The army couldn't do everything. It still hurt. "When are you going to tell me how we make all that food?" Kaladin whispered. Beard looked around in the stairwell. He leaned in.
"I don't know, Cal, but the first thing that Azure did when he took command had us attack the low monastery by the eastern gates away from the palace. I know men from other companies who are on that assault. The place had been overrun by rioters."
"They had a soulcaster, didn't they?" Beard nodded.
"Only one in the city that wasn't at the palace when it, you know."
"But how do we use it without drawing the screamers?" Kaladin asked.
"Well," Beard said, and his tone shifted, "I can't tell you all the secrets, but..."
He launched into a story about the time Beard himself had learned to use a soulcaster from the King of Herdaz. Maybe he wasn't the best source of information.
"The High Marshal," Kaladin interrupted. "Have you noticed the odd thing about her shard blade? No gemstone on the pommel or crossguard."
Beard eyed him, lit by the stairwell's window slits. Calling the High Marshal a she always provoked a response.
"Maybe that's why the High Marshal never dismisses it," Beard said. "Maybe it's broken somehow?"
"Maybe," Kaladin said. Aside from his fellow Radiance Blades, he'd seen one shard blade before that didn't have a gemstone on it. The blade of the assassin in white. An honor blade, which granted radiant powers to whoever held it. If Azure held a weapon that let her have the power of soul casting, perhaps that explained why the screamers hadn't found out yet. They finally emerged onto the top of the wall, stepping into sunlight. The two of them stopped there, looking inward over the flowing city, with the breaching wind blades and rolling hills. The palace, ever in gloom, dominated the far side. The wall guard barely patrolled the section of wall that passed behind it. "Did you know anyone in the palace guard ranks?" Kaladin asked. "Are any of the men in there still in contact with families out here or anything?" Beard shook his head.
"I got close a little while back. I heard voices, Cal, whispering to me to join them. The High Marshal says we have to close our ears to those. They can't take us unless we listen."
He rested his hand on Kaladin's shoulder.
"Your questions are honest, Cal, but you worry too much. We need to focus on the wall. Best not to talk too much about the Queen or the palace.
Like we don't talk about Azure being a woman."
"Her secret," Beard winced, "I mean, the High Marshal's secret, is ours to guard and protect."
"We do a storming poor job of that, then. Hopefully we're better at defending the wall." Beard shrugged, hand still on Kaladin's shoulder. For the first time, Kaladin noticed something. "No glyph ward." Beard glanced at his arm, where he wore the traditional white armband that you'd tie a glyph ward around. His was blank.
"Yeah,"
he said, shoving his hand in his coat pocket.
"Why not?"
Kaladin said. Beard shrugged.
"Let's just say, I know a lot about telling which stories have been made up. Nobody's watching over us, Cal."
He trudged off toward their muster station, one of the tower structures that lined the wall. Syl stood up on Kaladin's shoulder, then walked up, as if on invisible steps, through the air to stand even with his eyes. She looked after Beard, her girlish dress rippling in wind that Kaladin couldn't feel.
"Dalinar thinks God isn't dead," she said, "just that the Almighty, Honor, was never actually God."
"You're part of Honor. Doesn't that offend you?"
"Every child eventually realizes that her father isn't actually God."
She looked at him.
"Do you think anybody is watching? Do you really think there isn't anything out there?"
Strange question to answer, to a little bit of a divinity. Kaladin lingered in the doorway to the guard tower. Inside, the men of his squad, Platoon 7, Squad 2, which didn't have the same ring to it as Bridge 4, laughed and banged about as they gathered equipment. "I used to take the terrible things that had happened to me," he said, "as proof that there was no God. Then, in some of my darkest moments, I took my life as proof there must be something up there, for only intentional cruelty could offer an explanation. He took a deep breath, then looked toward the clouds. He'd been delivered up to the sky and had found magnificence there. He'd been given the power to protect and defend. "Now," he said, "now I don't know. With all due respect, I think Dalinar's beliefs sound too convenient. Now that one deity has proven faulty, he insists the Almighty must never have been God? That there must be something else? I don't like it. So, maybe this simply isn't a question we can ever answer." He stepped into the fortification. It had broad doorways on either side leading in from the wall, while slits along the outward side provided archer positions, as did the roof. To his right stood racks of weapons and shields and a table for mess. Above that, a large window looked out at the city beyond, where those inside could get specific orders via signal flags from below. He was sliding his shield onto a rack when the drums sounded, calling the alarm. Syl zipped up behind him like a string suddenly pulled taut.
"Assault on the wall!"
Kaladin shouted, reading the drumbeats.
"Equip up!"
He scrambled across the room and seized a pike from the line on the wall. He tossed it to the first man who came, then continued distributing as the men scrambled to obey the signals. Lieutenant Noro and Beard handed out shields, rectangular full shields in contrast to the small round patrolling shields they'd carried below.
"Form up!"
Kaladin shouted, right before Noro did it. "Storms, I'm not their commander." Feeling like an idiot, Kaladin took his own pike and balanced the long pole, carrying it out beside Beard, who carried only a shield. On the wall, the four squads formed a bristling formation of pikes and overlapping shields. Some of the men in the center, like Kaladin and Noro, held only a pike, gripping it two-handed. Sweat trickled down Kaladin's temples. He'd been trained briefly in pike blocks during his time in Amaram's army. They were used as a counter to heavy cavalry, which was a newer development in Alethi warfare. He couldn't imagine that they'd be terribly effective atop a wall. They were great for thrusting outward toward an enemy block of troops, but it was difficult for him to keep the pike pointed upward. It didn't balance well that way. But how else were they to fight the fused? The other platoon that shared a station with them formed up on the tower's top, holding bows. Hopefully, the arrow cover mixed with the defensive pike formation would be effective. Kaladin finally saw the fused streaking through the air, approaching another section of the wall. Men in his platoon waited, nervous, adjusting glyph wards or repositioning shields. The fused clashed distantly with others of the wall guard. Kaladin could barely make out yells. The drumbeats from the drummers' stations were a holding beat, telling everyone to remain in their own section. Syl came zipping back, moving agitatedly, sweeping one way, then the other. Several men in the formation leaned out, as if wanting to break away and go charging to where their fellows were fighting. "Steady," Kaladin thought, but cut himself off from saying it. He wasn't in command here. Captain Didenor, the platoon leader, hadn't arrived yet, which meant Noro was the ranking officer, with seniority over the other squad lieutenants. Kaladin gritted his teeth, straining, forcibly keeping himself from giving any kind of order until, blessedly, Noro spoke up.
"Now, don't you break away, Hid," the lieutenant called. "Keep your shields together, men. If we rush off now, we'll be easy pickings."
The men reluctantly pulled back into formation. Eventually, the fused streaked away. Their strikes never lasted long. They would hit hard, testing reaction times at various places along the wall, and they often broke into and searched the towers nearby. They were preparing for a true assault and, Kaladin figured, also trying to find out how the wall guard was feeding itself. The drums signaled for the squads to stand down, and the men of Kaladin's platoon lethargically trudged back to their tower. A sense of frustration accompanied them, pent-up aggression. All of that anxiety, the rush of the battle, only to stand around and sweat while other men died. Kaladin helped rack up the weapons, then got himself a bowl of stew and joined Lieutenant Noro, who was waiting on the wall right outside the tower. A messenger used signal flags to indicate to others down in the city that Noro's platoon hadn't engaged. "You have my apologies, sir," Kaladin said softly. I'll see it doesn't happen again.
It?
I preempted you earlier, Kaladin said. Gave orders when it was your place.
Oh, well, you're quite quick off the cuff, Cal. Eager for combat, I'd say.
Perhaps, sir.
You want to prove yourself to the team, Noro said, rubbing his wispy beard. Well, I like a man with enthusiasm. Keep your head, and I suspect you'll end up as a squad leader before too long.
He said it like a proud parent.
Permission, sir, to be excused from duty? There might be wounded that need my attention farther along the wall.
Wounded? Cal, I know you said you had some field medicine training, but the Army's surgeons will be there already.
Right. They'd have actual surgeons. Noro clapped him on the shoulder.
Go in and eat your stew. There will be enough action later. Don't run too fast toward danger, all right?
I'll try to remember that, sir.
Still, there was nothing to do but walk back into the tower, Syl alighting on his shoulder, and sit down to eat his stew.